The look of panic. And welcome again to Zero Credits, the show where we talk about things. I'm Henry.
And I'm John.
And together we're Henry and John. How are you today, John?
I'm pretty all right.
That's wonderful.
I'm pretty tired, as I usually am when we record these things, but other than that, I think life's treating me pretty well.
Oh, good. You know, John, happy International Women's Day.
Happy International Women's Day. And speaking of doing particularly well, I just consumed about $10 worth of Taco Bell food.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Oh. It's not treating me well, but
I'm drinking delicious strawberry Starburst Freeze
from Taco Bell.
From Taco Bell.
Ah.
And you've currently got $10 worth of Taco Bell.
$10 worth of burritos.
In your stomach.
That's the finest food you can buy for $10. Oh, God.
You gonna be alright, man?
I'm good. I was very hungry, and that was filling and delicious.
That's great.
And nutritious and healthy.
Yeah, it's got all your major, like, meats. Not meats, you're a vegetarian,
yeah,
I'm sorry. All
fine.
Your favorite proteins and cheeses and breads.
It's full food pyramid. They don't use food pyramid now, it's the My Plate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got all your plates.
Yeah, it's got all your plates.
It's got, if you roll that burrito out, it's got your proteins.
Proteins.
It's got your potatoes.
Potatoes.
It's got your tortillas.
Tortillas.
And it's got your fire sauce.
Fire sauce. The most important is the fire sauce plate.
People are like, oh, I only need to get in 10% of my daily allowance of calories from fire sauce. I can skip it. But fire sauce has antioxidants, y'all.
It just burns the oxidants right out of you.
Yeah, fuck those oxidants.
Yeah.
So how are you, Henry?
Oh, I'm doing all right. You know, I'm really kind of pepped up because of all the sugar in this Starburst.
Because of your Starburst Taco Bell freeze.
Yes.
From Taco Bell.
And I'm raring to go. We're going to wrestle a bear later, right? That's the segment we got planned. We're wrestling a bear.
Maybe next podcast.
Oh, okay.
We might make that a new podcast.
A new podcast where one of us wrestles a bear?
Yeah, you.
Oh, can we call it The Revenant?
We can.
Oh, that's interesting.
We'll call it The Revenant 2, because in the first Revenant, the bear wrestled him.
I guess, yes.
Wrestled him pretty hard enough to win an Oscar.
Well, I think it's that time again, John. Time again to ask the first segment, what are we doing?
What are we doing?
Sounds like we're fishing for a sponsorship from a certain restaurant establishment.
I don't think that's necessarily true.
Okay. John,
if they choose to sponsor us, it's on them. It's only because we love their products. It's only because we love their products that we eat them.
Yeah, I mean,
and if they decide to show us some love, that's Taco Bell's business. I'm not one to kiss and tell.
What about eat and then describe vividly over a podcast? Oh, God, John.
Okay.
Are you doing okay, man?
I'm all right.
Alright.
Look, so if Taco Bell, you just want to give us a holler, ring our little red phone, just, you let us know, okay?
Get in contact with us.
Get in contact with us at our brand new email address.
The brand new, it's sparkling. We haven't even received a single email yet.
Do you want to be the first one in our inbox? You know you do.
Well, here's what you have to do. Just email zerocreditsisapodcast@gmail.com.
Zero Credits is a podcast. ZeroCreditsisapodcast @gmail.com.
That's right. Good spelling, John. You won the spelling bee.
Perfect. But no, in all seriousness, all seriousness aside, we have an email address, and you're going to hear it later, but for right now, you get in contact with us, Taco Bell.
Yeah.
You let us know.
Have your people email just the two of us. We don't have people.
Yeah. We don't have people yet. You could be our people.
You could be our people. We're willing to make that deal. And you know, John's... John's willing to make the sacrifice to eat Taco Bell every day for the rest of his life.
I am. It's fine.
He's not deconstructing on this couch right now.
I'm totally okay. That's cool.
In other exciting news.
Yes.
Also related to having, like, a username.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Twitter! We finally got our shit together and made a Twitter!
Thanks to all of your kind donations, we finally were able to afford a Twitter.
Yes, the Kickstarter was successful,
The Patreon was mildly successful, and let's not talk about the GoFundMe.
We pulled all of the donations together from those three sites, and we were able to purchase one Twitter account.
And it might be small now, but it will grow.
Yeah.
A stitch in time saves nine.
That's what they say on the golf course.
And if you plant a tweet, you watch it grow.
That's what they say on the tweet course.
So you can hit us up on our Twitter.
But you can hit us up on our Twitter.
Yeah, hit us up on our Twitter.
And the username is really easy to remember.
It's maybe the easiest Twitter you've ever followed.
Just remember, ZCPCWHJ.
That's at ZCPCWHJ for 0 Credits Podcast with Henry John.
Yes, Henry John.
There'd be an A in there if there
was. Oh no,
A.
Did we mess up? Do we have to do another Kickstarter to make it correct?
How are we going to raise enough money for another Twitter?
I don't know.
Shit.
Oh god. Maybe the government can give us like a bailout.
Oh, yeah, that works.
Does the government bail out podcasts?
Probably.
Because we've sunk all of our money into this Twitter account.
Lord knows they bailed out all those other phonies.
Ha, 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 ha. John. I need you to get your shit together. So yes, that's ZCPCWHJ. So easy to remember.
And send us a tweet. Favorite our tweets. Tell other people about our Twitter. Send us money through Twitter.
Oh yeah, do that. Do that last one.
So speaking of news.
Oh, yes.
There's an item in the news that I've taken some amount of umbrage with. Sometimes things really grind my gears.
Oh, that's that segment from that news show. Family Guy.
Anyway, there was this baseball game that was going on.
A baseball game? Do tell.
And I don't really follow baseball, so I don't know. Was it the Orioles?
Dude, I don't know what you're saying.
There was a child.
A child?
In the stands.
Wow.
And the batsman. I believe you called it a pitcher.
No, John, you're confused. You were right the first time. The batsman.
So the batsman, he let a wild crack fly at their baseball, but it flew out of his hands.
The bat.
Yes.
The batsman lost his bat.
The batsman lost his bat and it flew into the audience.
Oh my, and the child was in the audience.
Yes.
Ooh.
And there's a fairly famous picture of this kid, like, on his phone with a bat about a foot away from his head, and then the person next to him put his arm out to stop the bat.
Now, little do you know, dear listener, the guy's arm was, like, as thick as the bat, if this is the same picture.
Yeah, this person was very built.
He was ripped.
I think he was the perfect person to be there at the time to keep that bat from hitting that kid.
So this is grinding your gears?
It's grinding my gears in the reaction that it has garnered on the internet. You know, it's hard to say on the internet, because when you say on the internet, you really just mean from the public, because everything's on the internet.
You're right. Even we are on the internet.
Primarily, actually.
ZCPCWHJ.
And ZCPCWHJ.
Now, continue.
Anyway, so there was a piece written on Slate, I forget who wrote it, and it echoes the sentiment that was posted on Huffington Post and a few other places, and they don't make a big issue of it, they're just noticing that this thing happened, but it's peppered with these little comments of, oh, maybe this'll teach the kid to get off his darn phone, or serves that kid right for being on his phone during a baseball game, or it's all this weird technophobic garbage that's put in there as jokes. I understand that. I understand that's not meant to be taken totally seriously.
I would say about half are. The other half are serious.
I mean, I am a somewhat firm believer in the idea that I don't think there is a grain of truth in all jokes, but I think that all truths have a basis in reality or they wouldn't be jokes.
Gotcha.
So I do think that this comes from a place of some people feeling somewhat engendered toward thing that this kid should not have been on his phone.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's so many factors. What if he had just gotten a text? What if his mom's in the hospital and his doctor's sending him updates? What if, God forbid, it wasn't his team at bat?
Yeah, I mean, that's entirely possible.
When your team's not at bat, you don't really care until you hear the crack of the bat hitting the ball. Then you mm-hmm. look up to see how the outfield is doing.
Mm-hmm.
If it's the first or second or even third inning, you know, the pressure doesn't really, like, step up into the last innings.
But, I mean, it's not even a sanctity of baseball or even where that kid's priorities were. I just get very upset when people seem to wish either, like, mental or physical distress on people who are engaged on their phones.
I gotcha.
Like, I've been in restaurants with people before, and if they see people at a table taking a picture of their food, they're like, oh, I hope they get something hot spilled on them, or I hope they spill their drinks. And it's like, these people don't deserve what you want to happen to them just because they're not engaged with the world in the way that you want them to be.
Oh, yeah, right. Totally. I'm super listening.
This bit plays fantastically on a podcast. Henry's on his phone.
What?
Fuck.
This isn't a bit. I'm just... Oh, man, I'm so interested in what you're saying.
Oh, no, a bat! Flying right at you.
Like the animal?
Oh, no, a bat!
Like a bat? Oh, God. Hopefully some muscly-armed stranger will punch that bat away from...
He can't always be there.
Oh, he's too busy saving the life of some kid.
Mm-hmm. You've had your chance. That kid, he's got so many years ahead of him.
So you think that kid's gonna put his phone down?
Yeah, I hope not. I hope that kid stays on his phone, like we all will, because we're slowly phasing out of standard human existence into this weird transhumanist bullshit.
I mean, here's the thing about that situation. So you've got a kid on his phone, mm-hmm. and you've got all these people hating on this kid or whatever, and this bat's flying at him, but he was saved by a fellow human.
Mm-hmm.
That's a perfect sort of, like, example of society.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting to a point where we don't have to pay attention because others will look out for us, mm-hmm. because if others don't look out for us, society falls.
I mean, I think that's basically what society is.
I mean...
Or what it should be, I guess.
Like, the rules, the agreement to be a society is sort of like an unspoken agreement to keep everybody else in the society in the society.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, like, people, usually they will help a person in need, because if you don't get your help, you're going to fall out of society, and then what are you going to have? Nothing, because look, in the society, we got a hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the society, I guess you get, like, you can go to Mexico. They got back alley doctors.
That's still society. That's still people helping each other
out. Yeah, but it's not our society.
Oh, no.
Our society isn't back alley doctors. Our society is you get sick, you go bankrupt.
Perfect.
Isn't that a good society?
Well, that is the social contract, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, Rousseau.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rousseau. Yeah. Jean-Jacques Rousseau?
Mm-hmm.
Is that... That's basically what he was saying, right?
Yeah, it had more to do with politics, but it's the general idea of you... To be a part of society, you have to agree to a certain... unspoken set of rules, and if you break those, society has no obligation to keep you around.
I really like the part where he said, you know, if the government is doing things wrong, the people have the obligation to tear down the government.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Which has then been misconstrued by neocons as you should secede or start a militia or some bullshit.
It's supposed to be through, like, public discourse and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's like, the people should bring forth to the government that, hey, you've broken the contract in the government, and it's like, oh yeah, that's right, we put this forth, mm-hmm. so now we have to step down.
Mm-hmm.
That's in the Constitution, isn't it? Or at least the Declaration of Independence?
I believe so.
It's in one of those two things, because Jefferson was a plagiarist. I don't know if you know that.
I didn't.
He plagiarized a lot of either the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence, one of those.
Most people weren't very smart back then.
Well, I mean, it was in an era of, like, a lot of people didn't read.
Mm-hmm.
French philosophers.
Yeah.
And Jefferson did. So he borrowed a couple of ideas.
Thanks for our country, Enlightenment.
Yeah, that was the Age of Enlightenment.
Yeah, the Enlightenment is the only reason America exists.
Pretty much. That and also France.
We're basically a French country.
Well, no, we got help after the Battle of Saratoga.
True.
And so France gave us supplies and reinforcements, and that's why we won.
But then they copied our revolution, huh? The number of people I've talked to who actually seem to believe that might actually be the case is kind of staggering.
that the French copied our revolution.
They were like, oh, they saw that we had a revolution, so they went and had one. It's like, that's not history.
I guess you could say they were influenced to a degree, but their revolution is a lot different than ours.
Yeah, it's way better. I like the French Revolution way more than ours.
Oh, what, you like their fraternité?
No, I like their égalité.
They were liberty, égalité, fraternity, égalité?
Yes.
What were we? We were liberty something and something.
I don't know.
I don't remember.
Liberty, freedom, and freedom.
Maybe it was liberty, freedom, pursuit of happiness or something like that.
Maybe.
And their liberty, right to property, or I used to know this stuff. I was really good at history at one point in time.
So was I, and I'm not now, but yes, I like the French Revolution a lot.
I don't like the part after the French Revolution. The Reign of Terror.
Oh, I consider that to be a part of the French Revolution, because the French Revolution, to me, is this very long period of unrest.
Well, they do say, like, each revolution is one part revolution, one part counter-revolution, and the full thing is the thing. So I guess the Reign of Terror is the counter-revolution to the original French Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
But still...
Oh, Robespierre. You know what the French Revolution gave us? Not that delicious Starburst Taco Bell freeze freeze.
You're right. This came from Taco Bell, not the French Revolution.
The French Revolution did give us some fantastic literature, though.
Like, for example, I gestured toward John.
Oh, I mean the entire renaissance of French literature. Your Dumas, your Hugos.
Oh yeah, Les Miserables is about not the French Revolution, but one of the many revolutions after the initial revolution.
Yeah.
Because, like, they revolted for, like, a couple hundred years after their main revolution.
Man, I feel really dumb for not knowing if Dumas is post-French Revolution or not.
Oh, well, you know what they say.
Fact check it on your phone.
No! John, this is very dangerous. Don't you know we're at a baseball game right now?
No, the bats.
Here comes a bat. I saved your life, John.
Thanks, Beefy Arm Stranger.
John, you know my name.
Thanks, Beefy Arm Stranger.
No, John, oh god, his phone's taking his memory.
Oh.
That's why he can't remember if Dumas was post.
Yeah, he was born in the 1800s, of course.
Oh, that's way post, dude.
Yep. You're right.
Not really. I'm thinking of the American Revolution.
Wait. I don't know anything. Zero credits.
1776, and then the French Revolution was what, 1820?
Something like that.
All right.
In 1776, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, you know?
Yeah, made it all the way to Delaware.
Did he?
Stabbed the British in their necks. We all think it's George Washington. I know it was Columbus.
You know what they say about Columbus?
Zero credits?
Something's rotten in the state of Denmark.
All right, well now you're just being facetious. Ah! What a good Starburst Strawberry Freeze from Taco Bell.
Oh, is it strawberry?
Maybe.
Probably.
I don't remember.
You can't taste it.
It just tastes like sugar, John. I mean, it tastes like deliciousness, John.
Great. Cinnabon Delights.
That's not... Is that Taco Bell?
Yeah, that's Taco Bell.
I got Cinnabon Delights?
Yeah.
We gotta go back. We didn't get none of those.
You're right. Right back.
That's a joke.
But... Okay, we'll do it next time.
All right, next time. Next time, we'll be sponsored by Cinnabon Delights Taco Bell.
You know what that reminds me of?
What's that remind you of?
What did you get for Christmas? Is that the new segment?
No.
All right. That reminds me of... What have you been watching, Henry?
Oh, that's a good question, John. Did you know... On Saturday, I watched a total of 7 movies.
That's a lot of movies.
Let me pick one to talk about.
You can talk about however many of them you want
to. I'm just
going
to talk about one.
All right.
Groundhog Day.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, I'd never seen it before.
Really?
Really.
Okay.
I mean, I knew the premise. I knew it was Bernie Madoff. I knew it was Bill Murray.
Yes.
And, you know, the premise, he's stuck in Pawtucket.
Mm-hmm.
Is it? Yeah, Pawtucket?
Punxsutawney.
Punxsutawney. He's stuck in Punxsutawney on Groundhog Day, and they're the one, they're the place that does the big celebration. They've got Pawtucket Phil, who's the groundhog. I knew all this, and I just never had sat down to watch. It's kind of like Back to the Future, you know? If you watch enough things, you kind of get the plot of Back to the Future without having to watch it.
Yeah, you just absorb it through the atmosphere. You just get like a contact high from context that's like, oh, this is what this movie must be.
Yeah. So I sat down and I watched it, and I just, you know, I liked it. I very much liked it. I didn't expect Bill Murray to start out as a, you know, the cynical jerk guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've only seen him where he's not a cynical jerk guy.
Yeah.
Like in Zombieland.
Well.
Well, he's a cynical jerk in that.
Or Scrooged. Wait. He's a cynical jerk. Ghost, well, no, yeah, not just, Ghostbusters. Just,
oh, God.
Garfield.
Mmm.
Oh.
Those Garfield movies, though.
Caddyshack?
Never saw it.
Oh.
It's got a groundhog in it, though.
He's
right?
Kind of a lovable goof.
Okay. So, yeah. He's got a, he's just like this really cynical, and it's confusing, because he's the weatherman?
Mm-hmm.
But he seems like he's the co-anchor.
I think he's a weather personality.
Yeah.
In whatever...
That small studio they were in?
Yeah, whatever market they're serving.
Yeah.
I really liked all the character relationships in Groundhog Day. It's been a while since I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of the things that I really believe in with movies is that they benefit from small scale.
Oh, yeah.
Like, scaling a movie back and making it deep instead of wide is basically a surefire way to make an interesting movie.
It was a really interesting sort of design in, like, what this character can only move in a certain range of places in a 24-hour period, you know? Mm-hmm. We can't shuttle off to a different city, and, like, they even try, but, like, the road is blocked because of a blizzard, so it's kind of like, these are the parameters of your playground, have at it.
Mm-hmm.
And he does have fun. I mean, you know, people have written about, like, for him to be able to play the piano that well, for him to be able to learn all these languages and whatnot, he spent, you know, a couple of years repeating the same day over and over again.
I read something that by someone's estimate, he had spent, like, 11 years in that town.
Yeah.
And that's... It communicates really well his desperation and just the amount of time that this has been going on for.
Mm-hmm.
Because only for the first few days do you see the consecutive days. And then after that, the movie never spells out how much time has passed, but you can tell that a pretty ridiculous amount of time is passing between each one.
The movie does a really good job with, like, the first time he's trying to court, like, his producer boss lady.
Mm-hmm.
And we see him go through all the way up until a stopping point, and then the movie will start the scene over, basically, on a new day.
Mm-hmm.
And go from there and see, like, the twists and turns. And it feels kind of like if you're saving before, like, a video game dialogue.
Yeah.
And so it's like, how do I get to this other person to say exactly what I want?
Mm-hmm.
But the movie does a really good job of, like, we don't have to see him wake up every time. Just start at the beginning of that scene or yeah. A little further into that scene.
It did something really powerful for movies to do, which is it established a conceit, it made sure the audience understood it, and then it played on that understanding by introducing nothing new.
Yeah.
It's like, these are the rules that you're playing by, and infer from there.
You basically just need to see him wake up three times and mm-hmm. live out that same morning part three times mm-hmm. before it's just like, okay, yeah, he's repeating the same day over and over again.
Yeah.
So we can just assume every time we see him, everything up until that point happened again.
Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know, direction-wise, I don't think it's not an exceptionally beautiful movie because it doesn't need to be. I think it does a really good job with visual humor.
Yeah.
It's really, I try to have this conversation with people sometimes. It's a really dark movie.
It's very dark.
Because if you think about the movie like two steps removed from exactly what it's showing you, it's really bleak.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there are scenes in that movie where he spent years in this town repeating the same day. Imagine how many times he's tried to kill himself.
Yeah. I mean, they show us a few, but yeah, I mean, yeah. At a certain point, you know, spoiler alert, but this is like a really old movie, so shame on you.
Mm-hmm.
I say, I just saw it this past weekend.
Eh.
But at a certain point, he steals the groundhog, and it's like, I think I would get to the point where it's like, this is his fault. Like,
yeah.
He's the one doing this. This is because he keeps saying six more weeks of winter. It's his fault.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, spectacular explosion at the bottom of a quarry.
And then, you know, that Sonny and Cher song.
Yeah.
Bear with me here. It's kind of a movie about nihilism.
Nothing matters?
Literally nothing matters. And he goes through, like, the phases of nihilism.
Yeah.
Where it's... It's disbelief of the truth, rejection of the truth, misery, and then he eventually reaches absurd bliss with the situation that nothing matters. Like, when it fully is seated in his brain that literally not a single thing matters,
yeah.
He becomes this... He lives there now. He lives in this reality where nothing has consequences.
I think that's true to a point, except for the last day he lives in the town, where he goes around and helps literally everyone.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a true nihilist, you would let the boy fall from the tree.
Not necessarily.
Well, it doesn't matter if he gets saved or not.
I mean, in the reality that I just spun with that, that would make sense, because nothing matters. But I think that the movie does a pretty good job of spelling out that he has spent so much time in this town that it's... Well, he ends the movie as being kind of a jerk.
Well, how so?
Like, most of the movie, 95% of the movie, he's a monster.
Yes.
And the way the movie's laid out, it looks like in the last 5%, he has a complete change of heart. That's a little out of character and seems somewhat manipulative, like when he's trying to date her.
Yeah.
But even then, his courting of her is part of him being a weird, stuck-in-one-place shithead.
Yeah.
But his altruistic actions do have a very... You know, this movie reminds me a lot of Scrooged.
I never saw Scrooged.
It's a retelling of Charles Dickens...
Yeah.
Yeah. Christmas Carol with Bill... You'd like it.
Okay.
It's basically Groundhog Day, but Christmas.
What?
I mean, it's Bill Murray essentially traveling through time and then becoming a good person.
Oh, so it's Groundhog Day, but Christmas.
Nailed it.
Wow.
I feel like I abandoned my point, but whatever.
It's okay, that's what I do to you.
Eh.
I'll say, this was one of the best magic realism films I've ever seen.
It totally is a magic realism film. Break it down for him, Henry.
Oh, well, something bizarre happens, it's never explained but accepted as reality, and then we explore it through, you know, characters instead of, like, science. That's what makes it a magic realism.
When does he cross the...
The threshold?
The threshold.
That's more of the story circle.
When does he
the cross monomyth. The monomyth. You want to know when he crosses the threshold? Probably when they go under the bridge. There's no threshold, though. Because I was looking for it. The first time they get there, the first time they arrive in the town, I'm looking for like a moment, a magical sort of moment where he crosses the threshold. The fact that there is no one moment you can point to, it's like, oh, he totally kicked a cat or something, and that's, you know, so he deserves to be here. The fact that that doesn't exist makes this more magical realism than something else.
Yeah.
It just happens.
I maybe conflated the crossing the threshold thing with magic realism, and that was remiss of me.
Yeah, there's not always a threshold in magic realism, especially in, like, Gabriel Garcia Marquez's stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Stuff just happens.
Yeah.
It's just the supernatural rubs against the normal just because that's life.
Yeah. I suppose it's just because I've read a lot of Murakami that I'm very used to this.
Yeah.
Because almost every one of his books has that moment. Even Sputnik Sweetheart, to a degree, has that moment in it. It's not particularly... Well, never mind.
Yeah.
It's magic realism.
But, Murakami sets up a threshold that his characters literally have to cross sometimes. Mm-hmm. Which, you see that sometimes in more modern, I guess, magic realism, or just alternative fiction. But, you know, the originator of it, Garcia Marquez, was just like, this is just the way my grandmother told stories to me. And so he wasn't worried about thresholds and whatnot and justifying, just like Groundhog Day, he wasn't worried about justifying the conceit. The conceit is established on the onset and you go from there.
I guess it speaks to Murakami, and I think it was an interview, I don't know, but he's said, or maybe someone... Zero credits.
Yeah, zero credits.
They said that his books... Maybe he said it. I quickly lost confidence. But the idea is Murakami books are essentially... You're watching these characters, like, navigate a labyrinth from above.
Gotcha.
And that you're watching how the actions they take have...
I'm trying to find it.
No, it's... You watch these characters, like, explore this book, this space, and then the things they pull out of it, you watch them do it. Instead of being part of this crazy magical world, you're watching characters in this crazy magical world.
Okay, so you just experience the world through the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I read 1Q84, and that seemed pretty true. It's...
Yeah.
The reader gets no information... In addition to the characters, it's like we know what the characters know and not a lot more other than he does have winking moments where he's got like the in that particular book, he's got these small people and sometimes they'll appear and they will just laugh. And it's up to you to interpret what that laughter means.
Yeah.
But that's like the only sort of outside information that we would get other than from the characters.
Maybe I should read more Gabriel
Garcia Marquez?
Yes.
He's a good one, but he's kind of dry.
Is he? I'm okay with dry literature.
100 Years of Solitude is just a straight up sort of annual for this town.
Mm-hmm.
It's like these are the events that happened in this town.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good read, but it is very dry.
I think I might have to read a slightly more moist book before I do that, because,
yeah.
Man, anyway.
Maybe start with Leafstorm.
Leafstorm?
That's a collection of short stories.
I still need to read Play It As It Lays. I have so many books to read.
You gotta read White Noise.
Yeah. I'm just gonna give up on Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. I love that book, but those last 100 pages, Jesus Christ.
I still haven't finished Slaughterhouse-5. I actually haven't read in
that book's like 2 pages long.
I haven't read in like 2 weeks though. I've been preoccupied with other
things. I've been extremely busy myself.
Yeah.
Anyway, here's what I watched.
Oh, John, what have you been watching?
I have 2 things.
Oh, well, this is just things you observe with your eyes.
Yes, this is our segment called
What Are You Watching?
Where we get to tell each other things that we experience with our eyes.
Yeah.
Not things we smelled, or things we heard, or things we touched. Only things we saw with our eyes.
Oh, I touched the movie.
Did you?
I touched Groundhog Day.
Oh, you get the touch-o-matic Groundhog.
Yep.
So what I watched was a movie called Malanoche.
Malanoche.
Bad Night.
That sounds bad.
By Gus Van Sant.
Don't know.
He directed Elephant... few other movies. Let me pull up an IMDb real quick.
All right, well, you do that, I'll fill the time. So it's the bottom of the fifth, and the home team is up at bat. The pitcher for the other team, he's been throwing straight fire all evening. Like, not even baseballs. He's throwing literal fireballs. And so, as you can, you know, you would expect, the home team's bats are running pretty low, because I don't know if you know this, but baseball bats are made of wood. And fire burns wood. I know, it's very shocking that they would allow this, but they checked in the rules, and there's nothing in the rules against throwing fireballs. So, you know, buckle up, home team. It's going to be a wild last 2 quarters, or innings.
So Gus Van Sant.
Oh, Gus Van Sant.
Directed a movie you might have heard of, Drugstore Cowboy.
Drugstore Cowboy.
Goodwill Hunting?
He did Good Will Hunting?
He did do Good Will Hunting.
Oh, that's the Matt Damon Ben Affleck written film.
It is.
They didn't write it.
Did they not?
It was Harvey Weinstein.
Fuck.
I mean, that's my understanding of it.
Good Will Hunting has the dumbest math problem in...
Oh, I know it. Movie. I know it. The dumb math problem?
Yeah.
It's, do you like apples?
What?
Oh! I got her number.
Yep.
How do you like them apples? Dumbest math problem ever.
Very dumb. Anyway. Also, the actual math problem's dumb. Anyway.
Sorry, so, Malanoche.
Malanoche by Gus Van Sant. It's a largely black and white feature, though there are some pops of color in interesting ways, but it's about the gay community in, I believe, California in the 80s. And I really like Gus Van Sant. He directed Elephant, which is a great, great movie that's, like a Romanoclef about the Columbine shootings.
What's a Romanoclef?
Romanoclef. I'm not pronouncing that correctly, by the way, readers. Why did you just say, yeah, you don't know? Anyway.
Romanoclef.
It's basically an interpretation of true events through the guise of fiction.
Oh, so True Blood. Cold Blood. And Cold Blood.
Yes.
Sorry.
That's actually... Well,
not the HBO show True Blood, but Truman Capote's In Cold Blood.
Well, if he had changed the characters' names...
Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Generally, they're... Not generally, but in the past, they've been satirical, and they're just artistic retellings of factual events while preserving the events, but editorializing a bit.
Gotcha.
So that's what Elephant is for the Columbine shootings. That's a great movie. And Malanoche is really bad.
What do you mean by bad? You mean badly done?
You see little bits of his genius, because he's a very skilled director.
Yeah.
He makes really great choices. But a lot of it just comes off as basically a student film. And it's his directorial debut. I understand that.
Oh, it might have been a student film.
Maybe.
But, well, give us a little bit of the premise or something. You know, I mean, not...
Well, I mean, the premise is there's a I believe he's a liquor store worker or a convenience store worker in this metropolitan town, and he has a crush on a Mexican immigrant, illegal Mexican immigrant, who works at another shop.
Okay.
And the movie is about, and it's a rather interesting premise for a movie, because the themes that keep getting explored is he wants to have a relationship with this person, but neither of them has the tools to communicate, like, language-wise or affection-wise. They're just not on the same level at all.
Gotcha.
And it's not a love story at all. It's almost entirely unrequited, but it's very fascinating to see this movie effectively about communication. And there's this great, really almost film noirish narration over most of it that's just fantastic, but it plods and it meanders in a really unpalatable way. Just big, ugly shots that go on for a long time and establish nothing. Characters making choices that make no sense, seemingly just to fill time. And it's only 78 minutes long.
Wow.
I know, I guess it's a really good example of something that has great ideas and subpar execution. That's not me saying Gus Van Sant's a bad director.
No, but this one film, maybe.
Yeah, this one film. It's not even a bad film.
Okay.
It just has questionable direction that I didn't particularly like, and I wouldn't really recommend it unless you go in knowing that, because I did leave with a kind of bad taste in my mouth from it.
Oh. Well, I mean, not every director's movies are going to be hits.
Oh, yeah, for sure, and especially since it's his directorial debut.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not crucifying him over it, but well, it's good. A thing that I watched, and these are my feelings about it.
You're right.
But no, if you can put up with some of that, and you're free to completely disagree with me, but it's a movie that's worth watching.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a little frustrating.
Yeah.
And the second thing I watched...
Dun dun dun!
Was...
Dun dun dun!
Australian comedy group, Auntie Donna.
Auntie Donna?
Yes.
Auntie Donna?
Auntie Donna.
I introduced you to Auntie Donna.
You did introduce me to Auntie Donna.
They're great.
I really want to talk about them on the podcast.
Alright, let's do it.
They're fantastic.
They are awesome.
They're this Australian sketch comedy group, maybe, slash improv group. It's hard to have one without the other.
Yeah.
And they're this, and I hate using this word, but they're this madcap kind of absurdist sketch comedy group.
Yeah.
And their sense of humor, their sensibilities is so in my wheelhouse.
They're really... The stuff they do is just really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Absurdist is definitely the word to use to describe them. I mean, they find a bit and they just kind of explode it within, like, seconds.
It's so hard to communicate what makes them good by recommending it to people, because good humor, I think, communicates on multiple levels. Like it's in your mind, it's visual at the same time.
Yeah.
And they do this great thing where they will make everything interesting, no matter how uninteresting the joke may have been.
Yeah.
Like, for example, they have this one sketch which plays on the trope of don't talk bad about someone when they leave the room, because invariably, if you're being filmed, they're going to be behind you and the camera will pan to them and you'll be like, oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
And they keep exploring it and exploding it and taking it apart in new and fun ways. And I think humor is like learning something new and unexpected, and that's why you laugh. And they just do that so well.
They do. They have a way of putting the joke on a pedestal, then putting the pedestal on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And then filming it, like, upside down while screaming.
Yeah, like, I tried for maybe an hour to deconstruct... So one of their shorts in their 1999 series, which they just started coming out with, is called Being Bigoted in the Workplace.
Oh, yeah.
And I tried to deconstruct what makes it so good. It took me a long, long time to realize that I can't even touch that level of comedic prowess. Because they have five or six things on the surface level that are just done so right.
Yeah.
And then the reason it's funny is because it takes those things, it takes the obvious jokes, the less obvious jokes, it intermingles them, turns them around, makes them a weird parody of itself, and then, like, takes a picture of that parody. It's crazy.
And then at the end, it's just like, oh, we weren't really subverting your expectations. Here is your expectations that, you know, we're going to present them to you at the end when we're done playing with this idea.
A lot of what goes into watching their stuff is trying to understand which level of the constructed lie that it exists in.
Yeah.
It's very disingenuous humor that's really funny.
And they're Australian.
They're Australian.
So they talk funny.
They have great accents.
They've got...
They say words like bevies.
Bevies with the boys.
Oh, God. Just... So, do yourself a favor. Go to Hulu.
Hulu.
Watch Malanoche.
Malanoche.
I mean, don't do yourself a favor. Whatever. It's a good movie, I guess. And then go to YouTube.
Go to YouTube.
And type in Auntie Donna.
Auntie Donna.
Bikey Wars. Or any other sketch that you don't know the name of yet because you haven't gone there.
Just type in Auntie Donna and click on the first video you see.
And then just watch all their videos. They're all good.
Yeah, they really are.
They are what I aspire to be in comedy to some extent.
And, you know, they're pretty big in Australia. They get funding from the government and also from, like, Google.
I mean, you know, it's one of those foreign countries, so they do things like have foundations for the arts and arts councils.
They do this little thing called supporting their artists.
Yeah. Whereas in America, we do the RATIONAL program, which is called letting your artist starve in the street.
Yeah. Or... You have to enter a competition or some type of weird festival and compete against other artists.
Can we demean you in front of millions and then completely corrupt your creative vision? Welcome to America.
Pretty much. I mean, that's part of the plot of Silicon Valley, which is a show on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
They have to enter, like, a tech corporate contest to, like, get money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, can we embarrass you while a different company that has more funds than you kind of, like, steals your idea?
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, that's
it's good old capitalism. Why would we give free money to people when we could just make you compete and be dumb?
Yeah. Why would we support artists?
All I'm saying is I want a time slot late at night where I can do whatever I want in a talk show format, just like Auntie Donna had twice.
Somehow they allowed them to host God, they're so good.
Yeah.
Everything they do is so good and I hate it.
They even do live shows. Like,
yeah.
I want to go to a live show.
Apparently they, like, sell the... I mean, apparently we don't need to give them any more press. But if you're American...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, in Australia, they clean house.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, let's get them some traction over here in the States.
If you can get past their thick accents, which I understand the Australian accent is the hardest accent to understand.
Xbox!
That's Scottish.
I know, but they have a sketch.
They have a sketch where a Scottish person tries to talk to me.
Menu.
Xbox. Back.
So games.
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 So good.
Assassin's Creed 3.
So good. So good.
Oh.
Oh.
Auntie Donna. You know, we're artists. We're both artists.
You know, we're both artists.
We are.
And we're not supported by the government.
Nope.
I wish we were.
Me too.
Because art is one of the only things I care about, and I wish that I was rewarded for it.
One of my philosophies in life is that you have to make compromises or else you'll go insane.
Mm-hmm.
Art is humanity's compromise.
Yeah, it's the only thing that keeps us from all just... launching ourselves into the sun.
If we didn't have television, if we didn't have movies, if we didn't have what we're calling art, video games are art, protected by the Constitution, so they count. If we didn't have all of this, if it was just, we wake up, we go to work, we eat, we go to sleep, we would all be dead.
I mean, art is one of those things that exists kind of outside the scientific model of human life, like the subsistence model for how people exist.
Yeah.
And it's largely not understood, and people kind of don't like to think about art, but it's so important.
Yeah.
Without it, we wouldn't exist.
That and Coca-Cola wouldn't have the swoosh.
You're right.
And what's life without the Coca-Cola swoosh?
Not a life worth living. Yay, Mississippi voted for Trump. Fuck. Well, hey there, stranger.
Oh, hi there, mister.
Are you looking for a brand new, fresh, and exciting podcast to get your word out there about your small business or large business?
You're right. I sure would need one.
How much money do you have?
It doesn't
matter. Zero credits is here for you.
That's, boy, golly gee, that's really convenient, guy.
How much would you like for upwards of 7 people a week to listen to your business pitch in 30 seconds of the most fastest-growing podcasts called Zero Credits?
Oh, I would like that a lot.
Then you can do it. Give us money and tell us what to say. We'll say it doesn't matter. Just tell us anything and we'll do it.
But gee, mister, you said I didn't have to give you money.
You need to give us money, just not no money. Oh. We'll take 50 cents.
Oh, well, here's 2 quarters.
All right, if anyone ever beats you, we'll advertise for them, because we don't sign contracts.
Oh, well, that sounds capitalistic.
First come, first serve.
We'll read my message.
What's the name of your business?
My name of my business is iKick Dogs.
Welcome back to Zero Credits. We are brought to you today by iKickDogs.com, the one website where you have to go to get your dog kicks. Kick dogs! If you want to kick dogs, go to iKickDogs.com, enter promo code ZEROCREDITS, and you get a 50% off your dog kick. Don't do that. Don't go there.
Wait, no, I didn't like that last part. The last part you said no.
What?
I wanted you to promote it, now you're anti-promoting.
You said I could improv.
Oh no, what have I wrought? What have I wrought?
That's right. So you know what day it is today, Henry?
It's Tuesday, John!
It's also the day of one of the presidential primaries.
Well, what do you know? You're right. I just checked my calendar.
In our home state.
Of?
No, doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Keep them guessing.
Well, there's 2 options, John.
I thought there's like 5 options.
I thought there were only 2 today.
No, there's like 5.
Alright, there are 5 options.
So, that's what's happening today, and we already mentioned that it's Interdependent National Woman Day.
Yeah, Interdependent National Woman's Day.
And, that's an occasion.
And on top of that...
It's National Pancake Day!
Whoa!
What a great holiday!
National Pancake Day?
I'm gonna drive by IHOP later and then look at the thousands of people who are going to be angry.
Because they ran out of pancakes hours ago.
Probably.
Wasn't there a thing they used to do where it's like you get a free pancake on Pancake Day?
Yeah, that's happening right now. The last time that happened, I saw how long the crowd was, I went across the street to Papa John's, get a Hawaiian pizza, and sat in the parking lot and ate it while I watched people sit in line to get pancakes.
That sounds weirdly vindictive.
Yeah.
You know, one time I tried to go to a place with free pancakes on Pancake Day, and it wasn't worth it.
Yeah, pancakes are...
Pancakes are delicious. Pancakes are delicious. What were you about to say?
I'm just going to say pancakes aren't worth waiting in line for like 2 hours.
Well, that's true. But pancakes are delicious.
No, pancakes are great.
All right. Well, I think it's time we hash this out.
Okay.
There is another breakfast food that you could eat with syrup and butter.
Yeah?
Some people call it a waffle.
Oh, that's not where I thought you were going with that.
Some people insist that one's better than the other.
Mm-hmm.
So, for this podcast to remain good and existing, you have to answer this next question correct.
Okay.
What's better, a waffle or a pancake?
Waffles.
God damn it, you're wrong.
They're absolutely better.
You are wrong.
There's more surface
area.
You
are wrong.
They're crispier.
Wrong.
They're still soft
wrong.
On the inside.
Wrong.
Nope, pancakes.
Wrong.
No, pancakes are delicious. They're great.
You're right. You're right. They're delicious. They're better than waffles. You want to know why?
Why?
It's got cake in the name.
Yeah, but if
it's a cake you can eat at breakfast.
What's a waffle cake?
Waffle is dumb.
Have you ever taken cake mix?
No.
Made it?
Yes.
Poured it in a waffle iron and made a waffle out of it?
No.
Delicious.
That doesn't exist.
It's a waffle cake.
That's not real.
Get a waffle iron.
You get a waffle iron.
You know what I did one time?
Lied about liking waffles more than pancakes on a national podcast?
I was real hungover at the Holiday Inn Resort in Panama City Beach, Florida.
That's a really specific location.
And they have one of those automatic little, listen... If you're as big of a fan as the breakfast buffet at hotels as I am...
You mean like the continental breakfast?
Yeah, the continental breakfast. If you're as big of a fan as I am, dear listener, you know what I mean when I say timed tourney waffle machines.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure a lot of people know what that is.
So I got a thing of waffle batter and I was very hungover. And so then I went and I got some Fruit Loops and I crushed them all up. I put them in the waffle batter and then I made a Fruit Loop waffle.
That's disgusting.
It was amazing. It was the best.
I never used the waffle turning tippy thing.
How? It's the most... Okay.
Because waffles are subpar.
They're even Belgian waffles. Belgian waffles are even better than regular waffles.
Waffles are no good unless they're in the shape of Mickey Mouse's head with chocolate chips in them.
Are they better than pancakes then?
No.
But that's the only time they're good.
Can't you also make pancakes in the shape of Mickey Mouse's head with chocolate chips in them?
Probably.
Have you ever tried?
I don't know how to make a pancake.
You know, there are these YouTube videos of people who make, like, pancake. Do you not know how to make a pancake? You're the second person I've talked to today that doesn't know how to make pancakes.
I've seen somebody do it.
You mix milk and flour and baking soda or powder, one of the two, and a little bit of sugar and some vanilla extract. You mix it all up until it looks like batter and you put it in a pan. And then when the bubbles on the top stop reforming, they just have a little hole.
Flip it.
Cook it for a second. Flip it off. You just made a pancake.
Easiest thing in the world. That's really easy.
I actually made some flatbread today.
You know why pancakes are so good?
Why?
They're so easy to make.
Waffles are easy to make.
Flatbread. You made flatbread
today.
You
have a special machine to make waffles. You don't even need to flip them.
You made some flatbread today.
I did. I made dal.
What's... Oh, dal. That's, they make, That's not a company.
It isn't. It's a company in Borderlands.
They make guns.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway. So I made dal, which is basically... You put a bunch of lentils and vegetables and spices in a pot, and you just keep reducing it until it's mush and it's delicious.
Yeah.
And I made that, and I was like, shit, I want some naan, but I'm too lazy to make naan. So I made flatbread, which is just flour and water, and you mix it around until it looks about right. Delicious.
Cool.
That's how people used to make bread before we got all capitalist-y.
What do you mean by capitalist-y?
Once we started having these yeasts.
What does yeast have to do with capitalism? Good answer.
Yeah. Capitalist yeast.
Well, it's a shame this is going to be the last episode of the podcast.
Why?
Because you answered the question incorrectly.
You know, I would actually say that they're about the same.
That's probably fair.
Yeah.
All right.
Like, I like to take the waffle stance because it usually makes people the most upset. But they're about the same. They're similar experiences.
Pancakes are delicious.
I mean, the problem with pancakes for me is all the toppings slide off the top.
What toppings?
My butter and my syrup.
No, that goes right into it.
But
covered in peanut butter.
But if I have a waffle, it can have too much butter on it. That's and all gross. Those pockets have too much syrup in them.
That's bad.
I want to go to Waffle House and order a pancake.
Do they make pancakes at Waffle House? I don't think so.
I think if you ask them to, they'll slap the shit out of you.
Yeah, and kick you out and say, go to Pancake House. Oh, wait, there is none.
There is a Pancake House.
An International House of Pancakes.
You know, why isn't there an International House of Waffles?
There is. It's called Waffle House.
No, that's just Waffle House. It's not international.
Well?
Is IHOP international?
Nope.
I really do not think that people in other countries would put up with IHOP shit.
No, they wouldn't.
They'd be like, you want me to pay $10
for a pancakes?
For a single pancake?
For a single pancakes?
For a single pancake with an avocado on it? That's ridiculous.
That sounds gross.
So what I usually order at IHOP...
is?
The California Scramble with extra avocados, which is a pile of eggs and avocado. I really don't want to talk about food post-Taco Bell, which was delicious, and I don't want any other food ever.
You're right, we just named so many other restaurants and foods, but Taco Bell's got the only pancakes I want to eat.
I'm sweating so much.
Good old Taco Bell. It's America's pastime. It makes you feel like $1 million. John can go run a tournament. Can run a whole tournament.
It's right. You're right. I can.
He's got energy for day.
I'm so tired. I mean, I have so much energies.
And don't worry about your wallet.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so affordable.
It's so affordable. I did this to myself for $10.
$10 will just make you a superstar athlete, just like John here.
Oh,
are you okay? You're turning a little red.
I'm okay. I'm good.
Well, John.
Shake the sillies out. What?
Well, John.
Oh, that's a tone of voice that makes it sound like you're about to.
Well, John.
End the podcast.
Well, John. I think we need to. We've been stalling for so long.
Mm-hmm.
We need to tell them that we're taking a break, man.
Oh no, we are.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but we're not gonna have an episode next week.
Yeah, unfortunately, we will be scattered to the winds. I will be in international waters. Henry will be in an undisclosed location.
Yeah, it'll be
It'll be a thing, but we'll be back not next week, but the week after, probably.
And I mean, hopefully we'll come back with some stories to let you guys know what's up.
And maybe some more segments other than just the two that we do every week.
I mean, if you think about it, life is just a series of experiences. Life is experience. So by going out and getting these experiences, hopefully we can bring them to you and enrich your life.
If anything, we're just investing in you by going out and living life.
Mm-hmm.
So we can help you experience more.
Live your life. And you know how we could even better help them live their lives?
How?
If they went ahead and got in contact with us.
Via our Twitter.
Via our email address.
Oh!
Which is zerocreditsasapodcast@gmail.com. Send in your fan mail, fan hate mail, pictures.
Alternatively, you can go to our Twitter at ZCPCWHJ.
Perfect.
And give us a tweet, or give us, I believe they call it a direct message.
A DM.
A DM. And tell us your life, and we can talk. We could just do a whole thing where we feature people who talk to us.
Yeah. Love us, criticize us, hate us, just talk to us. That's all we want.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, if you can't remember ZCPCWHJ, you can easily find us by searching Zero Credits in the Twitter search bar.
Yeah, if you type in Zero Credit or Zero Credit or Zero Credits, we're in there somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. You just find the logo. It's the same logo from the podcast.
The podcast. And you know, listeners, if you have trouble remembering ZCPCWHJ, I've come up with a helpful mnemonic to help you remember it.
Oh, that sounds really good, John. What is it?
Zen Christians pant chastely while hugging John.
Wow, that's so easy to remember. I'm never going to forget it now.
See? Mnemonic device. The single most efficient way to learn anything ever with no faults.
Now I can say ZCPCWHJ without even blinking an eye.
And I, too, am the very model of a modern major general.
Wow, that's just the planets. Like us on iTunes. Lerate and subscribe.
I'm sorry, lerate. Berate and subscribe.
Berate and subscribe. It's your right as an American online citizen, or the two guys in Ireland, maybe.
Yep.
And we will get back to you in 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks, we will return stronger, better than ever.
Say goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Ba da ba ba da ba.
My stomach just made a really unfortunate noise. It's like it waited for us to do the jingle and went...